You are listening to The New Man, Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier. He is joined in the studio by the show's producer, Casey Capshaw.
Do you find yourself engaging in something full bore, only to hit a wall after a few weeks? Have you fallen into a trap of being defined by what you do? And what's the distinction between commitment and attachment that could save you a ton of grief? We're back in the studio with Strength for Life author Sean Phillips as he explores the wisdom of knowing when to push through intensity and when to recover. We love to see our heroes on the stage, and they go into these amazing, you know, situations and then rise above, and it's like, oh, well, that's out there on the screen, right? But yeah. Really, we have these scenarios in our life, and we're probably unconsciously avoiding them all the time to really step into our own greatness and our own intensity, not to welcome more drama necessarily, but just like, oh, I can have that capacity to rise above the challenge at hand and be present and take action and do something good.
Well, and
that comes, that's strength. That's what you're saying.
Well, and that truly is the definition of strength. And I think that's the strength is, and there's a great line I use in there somewhere. It says strength is presence. It's really just the presence to be there, you know? And to these iconic figures from movies and other things, it's like, once again, if you go back to this, you know, culturally, I don't think we have a real healthy relationship with the masculine energy. You know, if any guy looks like he's on purpose and going someplace with speed and urgency, you know, most people shut down with what a hostile, aggressive, crazy.
It's intimidating.
Yeah, it's very intimidating. I check out to that. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, men, you know, sensitive men may start to shut themselves down, to not express those type of energies anymore. Yet, you know, when you look at the movies, we covet that masculine energy. We see it. We go, wow, that, we were joking earlier about the whole Daniel Craig, James Bond thing. I said, I don't think I've had a guy crush for a lot of years. I thought, that's pretty cool, you know?
Welcome to Guy Crush with Sean Phillips.
I'm like, he's got fit. He seems pretty serious. He's not some, you know, it's not a bunch of BS. He's got a sweet car, you know? And it's right on.
Living the dream.
Living the dream, baby.
But what you're saying is that we like it on the screen, but when it comes to bringing it into our lives, we really don't know how to handle that. Either it's an intensity or it's got a quality about it that is intimidating. It's so easy to lump in masculinity with pathological forms of masculinity. So a guy that's on purpose or whatever, I'm wondering it for you if it's more about like, oh, here's a man in his power. He may hurt me. He doesn't know how to bring his heart. He doesn't know how to stay true to himself and see me in the moment, which may have been where they grew up with it. A dad that had a lot of power but didn't have a lot of access to heart and presence to actually stay in touch with it and not use it in a hurtful way. Is that kind of what you're speaking to?
Well, and I think, you know, I'm talking to the, I think overall I am saying that. I think that it's, I was talking to the really expressing the masculine and being able to deal with that masculine energy, but ultimately maybe that really is the missing link for so many men, is that ability to bring the heart. And that's a challenging. And I mean, if you really want to deal with how can you presence and how can you resource in the body, you know, from a somatic, you know, style, how can you ground, you know, it's when you're called to bring that heart, when you're called to bring that vulnerability, you know, I'm part of an EO forum group, you know, the entrepreneurs group with a bunch of business owners, and, you know, they're all, you know, guys. And it's just amazing to see these guys bring some of the vulnerability they can bring. I mean, it's just, you know, it really can rock you when you see what a macho, strong business leader can, how they can show up, at least in a safe space.
You know, one of the things, and one of the big distinctions that I have to make over and over with guys is, vulnerability is not weakness.
Yeah.
For me to actually stand in front of a group and to be vulnerable takes strength for
yeah.
me. Like, I've got to dig deep into my reserves, and I'm going to now reveal something, or I'm going to bring more of myself forward. To me, that's a definition of true inner strength.
That, yeah.
I'm going to allow myself to open up. So somewhere along the lines, we got really fucking confused about what weakness is and what vulnerability is.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of guys in actually reacting and like, well, fuck that, blah, blah, that guy's or whatever. And it's really, it's just like, oh, you're avoiding bringing more of yourself into this moment.
Yeah.
Huh. That's actually weakness.
And that is a definition. And that's right on. I mean, I can tell you, you know, having come from a place where, you know, and I don't, you know, what the hell, I could go through all the dialogue, why? It's like, you know, consciously, I have no issue with talking whatsoever in front of groups. I have no issue consciously in my mind. Mm. But physically, emotionally, at some level, I get completely hijacked.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It's a challenge for me. So I know that it's something I need to move into more. And I've been practicing. I've worked on it for years. And I'm okay with the fact that it's a challenge for me. But I stand there, and I can tell you, it takes strength.
Somewhere along the way, it seems like you got reprogrammed where if, okay, this is unpleasant, this is, I want to run away, you got reprogrammed somewhere like, actually, there's a benefit. There's something to grow into, and when I'm on the other side of that, I have what? I have greater strength, more wholeness? What would, you know?
Well, and it's interesting you talk about that, because I had this whole analogy getting out of the shower this morning. This popped in my head, and, you know, things keep flying in my head all the time. That's one of my strengths and weaknesses. But I digress. And I have a bad left shoulder from putting my Harley down 4 years ago in the canyon, and it's really a wreck, and it's hard for me to train and some of the things. What I noticed was when I got out of the shower this morning, I grabbed my towel, and I realized, and I noticed this a few times, but I realized how much I favor. I don't let it become a pain because I avoid movements of my hand and arm before it becomes painful. So what it has done is conditioned me to move in a certain direction. So
you're reacting.
Yeah. Well, and I've been conditioned. So, and I thought about the analogy is this. Other people, you know, people have unconscious pains. They're no longer keen to the fact that they have a bad shoulder. They have a bad emotional. They have a hitch in the get along. They avoid public things or this. That avoidance has them turning in a circle in their life all the time. And they go familiar track. So they go round and round in a circle, not realizing that they just have a bad shoulder. Mm-hmm. They need to get surgery or work on it or do something with it. And so I realize that my life is going to keep revolving around that which I avoid.
Yes.
If I avoid that going in front of people and speaking, I'm not going to get better. I'm going to get worse and weaker at it. And I'm going to continue to have it be this big black mark that I revolve around. It's got a magnetic true north. I just go in circles around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that, you know, I have purpose. So I'm part of its purpose. I've got a message I want to convey and an impact I want to make. So if I'm going to do that, I have to move through this barrier.
You got to step through that fire.
Yeah, exactly. Walk the fire.
Yeah, exactly. I'm imagining, you know, if I were to just cater to the things that were not pleasant in my life and living that life of aversion, my life gets really narrow. I feel like it doesn't ever get to a place where it's... I just feel like it continues to get more and more narrow versus I learn how to step into that. And there's, you know, we call that our edge. Where's your edge? Where's things pretty comfortable and where does it get, that, you know, you put your toe just a little bit further and that's where it gets uncomfortable. We've got all kinds of defense mechanisms, saboteurs, our gremlins, whatever they may be, that's like, just get back into the comfort zone. But we got to learn how to, what you're saying is we got to learn how to just step through that. And then our life, I'm just getting, my life gets more expansive. Yeah. I have way more options. I've got way more capacity, you know, just all kinds of things open up for me. Oh, you want me to speak? Yeah, great. Boom. And then what does that lead to? Like all these things.
Well, and I love the whole narrower because I see it. I mean, I get these visuals and I watch people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and I watch the life continue to close down into this trap. I mean, it's like going down into the funnel, and it's just where you got a, you know, one little pinhole of light at the end. And I'm like, man, that's not, I mean, who wants to live that? And it's like, when you talk about the narrow, the analogy that comes up for me is chapter 2 of my book. I call it the shape of your life. And I give you kind of the look of how your life rises up, arcs over, and drops down.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, in your 20s, you can get away with about anything physically, you know, short of, you know, killing yourself, you're going to make it through. In your 30s, you think you can get away with more than you can, but you get away with some, right?
Right.
How you live 40 to 50 will dictate how and if you live the rest of your life. So what, there's that narrowing again.
Mm-hmm.
You get to the point where you don't have as much decisions about how, you know, you don't get away with it. When you get to be, you know, late 30s, 40s, if you've not decided to address some of these issues which are closing you down emotionally or address your physical condition, you're just going to get into, you know, a little tiny, you know, you've got no leeway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the doctor's going to start dictating your life,
right.
You know, mentally or physically, you
right.
know?
Right. And as you're saying that, I'm aware that some guys, maybe when they reach 40, they start staring down and like, oh shit, I'm 40 now. Things are different. My outlook on life is different. And a lot of guys get reactive. So they try to do too much. They try to expand themselves too much. So instead of a collapsing to it and getting more narrow, they actually try to overdo it. And I would call that posturing. They're not really being themselves. They're stretching themselves too much. What I'm saying is there's a fine line in there about where your edge is and actually leaning into that and continually leaning into that.
Well, and leaning into the edge is the growth. And there's also the safety because you got one foot in a safe place. And, you know, I'm pretty sensitive to how to push the edge and also I've developed a certain compassion with myself going, and there's times I need to retreat from that. You know, I need to move in, move out, move in, move out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just stand in the fire and burn all day. You move in and you go, okay, you know, because it'll start to test you.
There's a recovery.
There's a recovery.
There's the yin yang, right?
Yeah, the yin yang. And it's recovery. And it's something big in my book. I talk a lot about recovery. And thanks for bringing that up. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, it's the analogy I like to use is that, you know, recovery is like the silence between the notes that make the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I love that there's just the recognition of the importance of that recovery. I mean, I'm working with clients, and it's just really easy for us. Like every 2 weeks, we're checking in on deliverables, things that they want to be accountable for. And inevitably, they hit a wall.
Yeah.
Like the body's just like, I can't take their psyche. Like I can't take any more growth. I'm like, great. We actually planned for that in the beginning. One of the first meetings we had was like, you're going to hit a wall.
Yeah.
You're going to freak out at some point. And let's just plan on it. That'll mean it's time to recover.
And you know, the world is full of big walls. I mean, we got a ton of walls going on. And I mean, that analogy is up for me, you know, because I'm, you know, 44 now. And, after writing this book, I mean, I poured myself in for 2 years into this book and I've got the business going and I've got the family and we just got a 6-month-old now, little daughter, Lily, and I got a lot going on. And invariably, I just physically, you know, having been in great shape for 30 freaking years, I just hit a wall. I got exhausted. I got fatigued. I burned myself out. So I finally just started addressing, okay, how do I get real recovery here?
Mm-hmm.
What goes on? And I started, you know, seeing a doctor in Boulder, this guy, Dean Raffalock, who's just a freaking genius. And he says invariably, Sean, you know, and he's an alternative care acupuncturist, nutritionist, chiropractor, but really works with the whole body from the inside out. He says, you know, working in Boulder, he says, it's not the ponytail and sandal wearing guys that are coming in here that I see that have a problem. He goes, every type A driven male between the ages of 38 and 44 hit a freaking wall, bounce on their butt. Mm. And then they figure out, either they do something about it, and he says usually what happens with a type A is they can willpower themselves for two extra years beyond what their physical energy can carry them.
Mm-hmm.
Then they just wear out.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got to recharge, rebuild, regroup.
So what kind of helped me understand the lesson you learned, because that sounds like, I can imagine a lot of guys going down that thing and they don't talk about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
This isn't something they really want to share because it shows a vulnerability and they might be weak.
Yeah.
But what is that? You know, that guy that's between 38 and 44 and he's feeling like, fuck.
Well, and it's you know, I think there's a bunch of indicators, which are you start to feel that kind of subtle chronic depression. It's like a low energy depression. You're not really, you know, there's an anxiety that comes up. And I like to say it's a non-specific general anxiety. And it's actually a physical cause because your cortisol, you have a cortisol relationship, you have testosterone, you have hormones, you got your thyroid, you got adrenals. Adrenal fatigue sets off this cortisol cascade and all these things start to happen. And then you get to the point where your cortisol starts to get burnt out, and your cortisol is what your hormone that responds when you have stress. So when your cortisol starts to wear down because you've relied on that beyond your adrenals and other, you know, capacities, so you're running out of your capacity walls. What happens is you start to arise in what feels like a chronic general, it's called general anxiety disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You're stressed kind of all the time, but without any specific origin.
Mm-hmm. So there's nothing like, oh, well, my life's actually going pretty good. I got a new baby and my company and I'm writing a book and blah, blah, blah. But underneath, it's like...
Yeah, it's just like your shortness of breath. You're kind of like, you're stressing all the time. You may not be sleeping well. You don't have a really bright, shining, positive outlook. And a lot of that's because it's hormonal things. It's fatigue. You got to rebuild some adrenals. You got to rebuild your nutrition. You've mm-hmm. got to get some rest. Mm-hmm. You've got to, you know, take on some meditation. You got to use intelligent training. But you can really recoup yourself in a pretty short period of time mm-hmm. if you do it intentionally. But these guys walking around out there, I mean, you're going to, you know, in lack of awareness or getting into what's going on for you with not being in touch with your body, you're going to end up on some sort of medication. You're going to end up on statins. You're going to end up on antidepressant medications. You're going to end up being, quote unquote, treated as opposed to revived.
And it sounds like there's something to burn through there. There's something that, that I've experienced what you're talking about. And there's something that kind of has to be moved through. And for me, it's just a letting go, like learning how to let go, learning how to recover. It doesn't always have to be full on all the time. Actually learning how to animate that. You called it the feminine, but learning how to animate that yin and just release. That seems like A, I've got to acknowledge that I'm not doing as well as I want to do. B, I've got to then step into this other arena, which is really freaking uncomfortable because I'm defined by what I do. And what if I don't do this shit?
Yeah, it's funny that I have this, it's like when I have those, I was thinking a little bit about, you know, driving into the studio today, I'm thinking a little bit about, you know, it's like, sometimes I just enjoy the drive, I enjoy seeing things, and I feel myself in that state of relaxation, and I see the world so much clearer, and I have a sense of joy and a spark, and I'm like, wow, this is kind of cool. It's like, I don't see this stuff all the time. Like, I'm more keen to things on the side of the road, or I might see the snow in the mountains, and I'm kind of just, and I'm cruising through life. And all of a sudden I catch myself, I go, you know what? You're slacking off, dude. You're slacking off, you know? And so, I think what I'm talking about is I'm allowing myself to relax, to embrace that chill space, you know? Mm-hmm. But then I have that other alter ego side of me, which is the dude.
go.
Because if I'm not doing, what the hell am I doing? Right?
You get enough rest when you die.
Yeah, right? and let's take that back to strength training real quick. You know, so I'm talking to this group of YPOers recently, you know, doing a retreat forum with them. And one of the guys is like, you know, I don't take strength training because it, you know, really makes me sick. I get kind of really sick. I get exhausted and fatigued. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? I don't get it. So he's like, well, you know, I don't want to have the downtime because I'm really productive and my time is precious. So basically I go in and I just do it all without stopping. I'm like, well, that'll make you sick. Sorry. You're right. I mean,
well, there you go.
I mean, intensity, you can only be intense to the degree that you can relax in between the intensity set. So, I mean, that's the way life is. I mean, you know, I like to take practice into work where you do the, if you could do 55 minutes full on and then a 5 minute full recovery break. Because you can't, I mean, the mind cannot sustain an intensity for an infinite array of period of time.
Right.
So you've got to do, you know, life is intervals. How do you bring intervals into your work, into your life, and be present to your family when you're home, to your family? How do you be, you know, and I think it's the, I'm kind of talking the relaxation dialogues, what led me here. It's like, I'm with you. I don't do it as well as I could. Sometimes I do it real well, then I catch myself going, boy, you're doing too good at that.
Yeah, there's the fear that, I think there's an overall fear of like, I might just get stuck here.
I'll just
waste away. I'll get stagnant and I won't amount to anything. I won't hit the things that I want in my life. I won't be on purpose, whatever that would be true. It feels so counterproductive to recover.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive.
Just relax.
Well, and that really, I think for me, what rises up is, you know, I think about, you know, Eckhart Tolle and the power of now stuff, right? So you're a new earth, power now, whatever you want it to be, but basically it's now. And, you know, thanks to Oprah, he's really, the message is catching on and it's out there. And I hear so many professional men tell me, you know, I kind of dig the message and I like what he's saying, but I ain't taking on that guru stuff because then I'll be nothing. I'll disappear. I will disappear.
Right.
So is it, you know, ultimately is that fear of if I were to chill and be present to the moment, I would disappear.
That's pretty fragile.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, I can.
You'd
I
have
can,
to do it really well, by the way.
Maybe that's the whole trick. But, you know, you can see it's like, who am I without my goals, without my badges, without my honors, without my pursuits? If I'm not pursuing, if I'm not hunting, I'm worthless.
I'm amazed. You know, there's this thing of the difference between, I love this distinction between attachment and commitment. So commitment for me is like, I'm full in, I'm playing big time. And at the end of the game, like, hey, we won or lost, like, I'll be bummed, but I'm not attached. There's not a clinginess to it. There's not a dependency on it, but I can still be fully committed. And let's just call it for what it is. We're going to be dust in a few years, right?
Yeah.
So how can you really be that attached to anything? It's like, but you can be, but then guys are like, well, then I'm nothing on this planet. It's like, no. For me, it's like knowing that there's really nothing to win, so to speak, then I have more freedom and more choice to really dive in and fully commit. I don't know if that makes any sense there, but yeah. the dependency of who I am and what I'm about gets to be released. I feel more playful, I feel more open, and also more powerful because I'm not as precious about it.
Yeah, and I really, what comes up for me is the tension, and it's kind of that creative tension between setting a goal for yourself physically, having an image of who you want to be, using an iconic image, using another model or role model or something, or before and after picture, and having that be something that you're committed to creating, which is, you know, however you want to use visualization or other tools, so I can be committed to creating my best, fittest body, high energy body, because it serves my life, mm-hmm. but not be attached to the six-pack abs and the icon that they're trying to sell you.
Oh, if I don't have that, then I'm a failure. If I don't have this, then I've screwed up. It's versus like being able to have acceptance in the moment and have choice. And I still want to.
Yeah, and I still. How can I have my cake and eat it too? How can I love where I am today and still love where I'm going?
I think that's the thing that we like about, we were talking about the heroes, the guys on the screen. I think that's the difference. They can be fully committed, but they don't have that attachment.
Yeah.
When I've got that attachment, I get precious. I get kind of closed down. Yeah. I lose my sense of humor. I lose my curiosity. Yeah. Those guys in the movies, they have that ability to be like, throw that one-liner out. You know? And I'm not, I don't want to idolize those guys, but there is something in there that rings for us of like, wow, he's in this place. And he can throw the goofy one-liner out as he's getting ready to face death, you know, and he's not shirking it.
I think that's the hidden gem in there, which is really, and I hadn't really thought about that from that angle, but it's that, and I think you're right on with, and I love the distinction, by the way, the commitment attachment. I have not brought that one forth, and I'll borrow it in the future, because it really does speak to that whole piece of attachment. When you get attached, man, you start losing it. Mm-hmm. You can't handle it, man. Attachment's not good for any of us, and we have it all the time. But it's like, you know, and I have to say that the first thing that came up for me when you said the commitment attachment was my current dimension of sports. Right? I mean, I'm a guy. I love sports. Mm-hmm. Love football. Been a big Bronco fan. Man, I remember in the '80s and stuff when I was a kid, and John Elway lose a Super Bowl or something. Man, I was ruined. It took me 6 months to get well. You know, and you know, these days it's like, I love a good football game and I love sports. I love to attend. I love to watch. I enjoy it. And I might be, I'm a little better if they win, and a little worse if they lose. And it's like, okay, onward. Because I got my life.
Right.
That ain't my life. It's entertainment.
Not, yeah. There's not this thing there to define me and define my happiness and that kind
of thing. I'm committed to the game, but not attached to the outcome.
And that goes to who we choose to have in our lives, our partners. Yeah. You know, we've had on the show, we've talked with women before, and it's like they can smell it on a guy. If I have you, then I'll be happy. Yeah. It's like, that's a lot of pressure to bring to a relationship. Or if I just have this job, then I'll be happy. There's something about being able to go down this path, and this is what I love about the work that you're doing, about going in and finding out what's true for you and finding that acceptance and that wholeness already, and then bringing the choice of like, what do I want? What do I want to bring forth in this time?
Well, if you were to take my book and you skipped over everything in it and went simply to chapters 5 and 6, your blueprints for brilliance, and I forget the chapter title, it's a chapter 6, but it's really creating your life vision,
mm-hmm.
and creating your goals and your life vision. And if you did that for any area of your life, whether it's your career, your family, your life, you would have a clear, more inspired vision. I mean, for the $17.50 that Amazon charges, or the $26, or you can actually, Strength for Life, you can buy direct from me for $250. I'll sell it to you. So I think it's worth every penny of that. So I'll sell it direct, you know.
Help Sean out. Go to strengthforlife.com.
You know, but so the point being is, if you just take those chapters and create a vision with some inspiration and purpose and meaning to it, and tangible goals along the way. And I make an interesting distinction in here about the vision. And I think from a physical standpoint, and in so many areas of life, people collapse life vision with goals. They crunch a vision down to a goal. And I'll say, from a physical standpoint, people look at this before and after picture and they see, you know, they might need to lose 100 pounds and you know, they want to get this, you know, amazing before after picture, right? that's a vision of where you're going. You know, where, how am I going to live my life? That's a vision. That doesn't have a time frame. What has a time frame is, let's say in 12 weeks, I want to, you know, take my waist size down 2 inches, do this, add a few pounds of muscle. Those are tangible goals.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is people get this after picture where they want to go, and then they get this, they have a blank space on their page for a goal, and they write the goal in there. Well, they've set themselves up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to fail to achieve. You know, you can't achieve a 10-year life vision in a goal. Like, you know, for Full Strength, my nutrition shake, my vision is to have the nutrition shake, not just Full Strength, but have the nutrition shake be the most predominant form of fast food in America in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a vision.
Mm-hmm.
That's a BHAG.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working towards that, but not working on that today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not gauging tomorrow's sales on that vision.
Right.
That's a collapse. That's a proper use of vision, but so many people collapse the vision, put it on themselves, I have to achieve it tomorrow, and then they fail.
So it seems like the vision then provides the intention, or yeah, the kind of the overall, the overarching kind of direction, goal. Like where
you
are
use
we
the word
head?
Purpose. Intention's a great one, because I love the words, and I'm very, very, I use intention, and I use affirmations in the book and in the practices. I love the morning gratitude practice. I think, you know, just bringing some gratitude into your friggin' life, you know, mm-hmm, taking a moment to appreciate something.
Absolutely.
And that's, that gratitude's a muscle. You got to flex it or you just don't have it.
Right. Absolutely.
You know? But intention's a great word for the vision. I mean, life vision, intention, purpose, all those things are meanings and values and places we're headed. And if without, you know, I always draw the picture. I said, you know, if you've got a big life purpose, a big life vision, you know, and you look up at the top of the mountain, you say, that's it. Then you're, as you're headed towards that top, that peak, every time you step on a hill or over a smaller hill, it's part of the step and process in the path.
Right.
If you don't have an aspiring high purpose vision, basically you're looking across Kansas in a flat line, every single hill becomes a frickin' mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a roadblock, and there's no reason to go over it, and you stall.
Right, right. Why would I want to go? This doesn't feel right.
What a pain in the ass this is.
Yeah. Oh, why would I want to? Yeah, just I'm not connected to what would have me go through this challenge.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, before we wrap up, I want to get some kind of, I want to get some real value. Like, what can guys do? Let's name some of the challenges that are kind of most prevalent, and what can our listeners do, like, today that they can actually start to implement something today, some kind of challenge, something to bring forward, even some of the tips out of your book, like, man, just start doing this, and you will, you know, this will have you going down the right path.
Well, and I think if you look at what's the simple practices that you can apply today, and let me touch on something that I haven't touched on at all in this dialogue, which is nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
You want to bring some awareness and presence into your life. Pay attention to how the food makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
See, is you know, because what we're talking about here is manifesting your strength and yourself through the physical and your energy. And what very few people do in this world is take the time to recognize how foods impact their energy and their wellness, you know, because mm-hmm, you will never diet again if you can pay attention to how a food impacts your energy.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make you feel better or make you feel worse?
Right.
So take the time to do that. Take the time to check in after you eat, an hour after you eat. Is this food elevating my well-being and supporting my strength and energy, or is it causing me to take a nap?
Yeah, is it a liability?
Yeah.
Now I'm less of a man than I was an hour and a half ago,
exactly.
and I've got less resources available to do what I want to do today.
Well, and I'll call you to one other practice in the book. You know, I've got a few of them, but every morning when you get up, I mean, make this a practice. Do it for 2 weeks straight. I call it the 2-week gratitude challenge. For 2 weeks straight, get up in the morning and spend 5 minutes expressing gratitude to yourself or in a journal about something in your life and in your world. It can be gratitude that the sun's coming up this morning.
Hmm.
But express it and feel it. You don't have to share it with a bunch of people. You don't have to go out. You don't have to create yourself vulnerable. But most of us, if you don't have a practice of really appreciating something, having the gratitude for something, it will be in itself uncomfortable to have the feeling.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That seems to fit right back in with my ability to put out there and also my ability to receive. And so you're acknowledging in that sense of like, be able to receive, like acknowledge all the beautiful things that are happening in your life.
Well, and if you shut down that receiving, which, you know, I have my own challenges with receiving, but if you shut down that receiving, you ultimately shut down the giving.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. Yeah. That's it. There it is, that yin-yang thing again.
Yep.
I love how it permeates all your work, man. Well, anything else you want to share with us today, Sean?
My book, Strength for Life, has a little bit like a Seinfeld episode, in that it opens up with a story and a real life story about strength, and it closes with a similar piece about strength and what strength means to your life. And I would invite anybody to go to mystrengthforlife.com, where I give you the preview of the first chapter of the book. I give you the first couple chapters, actually, just to get a sense of it. But if you're in a bookstore or you pick the book up, chapter 15, which is the final closing chapter, really kind of gives you the secret, you know, the giveaway to a lifetime of strength. And it really comes full circle. And it's all what we're talking about today, which is you get stronger by sharing your strength.
Mm.
When you do for others, when you give it away, you get it back.
That's awesome, man. Thanks so much, Sean. I appreciate you being on the show. I can't wait to have you on again. I just want to keep going.
Yeah, rock on, Trip. I appreciate it. It was great to be on The New Man.
Absolutely, man. Well, we'll be checking in with you soon, and please go check out Strength for Life. You can get it at all major bookstores and online at Amazon, obviously. And I'm a huge fan of the Full Strength Shake. It fuels me during the day for sure. So thanks again, Sean.
Thank you, man.
We'll have you on soon.
All right, man. Look forward to it.
Be sure to subscribe to The New Man Podcast in iTunes or by visiting our website at www.thenewmanpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.